Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions in the law. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. On this show, I interview lawyers ditching the billable hour and experts who can help attorneys move beyond billing time. Thanks to my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, links to both in the show notes, more on them later, and use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up. You get 10% off, and it supports the show. The best way to support the show is to share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. Alicia, I'm thrilled to have you with me here today on LinkedIn Live, which is your first LinkedIn Live, so I'm happy I could be the first. Welcome to, you know, errors happening during a live event on the internet. Who would have thought? So sorry for those of you who were with us in the first minute that you got to witness previously. But for everyone else, I'm just going to have Alicia introduce herself again. So Alicia, just if my audience hasn't come across you yet before or hasn't seen the podcast where you interviewed me last year, go ahead and let everybody know who you are, what you do.
Well, I'm a business professional and I've always been a writer. I love to write. I do a monthly newsletter on LinkedIn called Creative Transformations. And we're just on this great learning path and learning journey these days. And we can create whatever kind of new world that we want to live in. And I'm really excited about artificial intelligence is a big part of that. And there's so much to talk about here. And I purchased a tool called QuickWrite AI, which I have been using and I do like, although I want to be sensitive to a lot of the issues that are out there about artificial intelligence, especially for creatives. So we're here to kind of talk about that and share the learning path and share both of our perspectives. So I could add more, but if you want to jump in, Curtis.
Yeah, absolutely. So for everybody who's part of Alicia's network, who I haven't had a chance to meet yet, my name's Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney. And since I'm not billing my time, I have to be as efficient with my time as possible when trying to deliver low-cost, affordable legal services to my clients. And to that end, I'm using Gen AI and I'm using automation tools. And I was using it even before Gen AI hit the scene. But because of that, I've always been an early adopter of these tools. And so I'm thrilled to have with me, you know, you here today, Alicia. Now, of course, we met both being solopreneurs in the Chicagoland area through a group called Scaling Freelance. It was through meetup.com/scalingfreelance. And now we're co-organizers in the group, taking over from the guys who started it like back in like 2017, I think, or 2018. And so we're doing a lot of things like with solopreneurs there. But today we're talking about Gen AI. So I'd love to just hear from you. Again, sorry you have to repeat yourself here, but I want to hear from you again, but for our live attendees for the first time, like, why are you using Gen AI when so many people are worried, especially writers, are worried about it's coming for our jobs? Not necessarily, well, you know, we'll get into the how you're using it, but first, just why are you even open to using these tools?
But I'm glad you asked. I am not an early adopter. I am a late adopter to things, but a friend of mine was promoting this. And I thought, well, I should be an early adopter. So I'm trying to be an early adopter. Like when Amazon has their, you know, sales, I try to buy something just to play with it. I wish I thought it was fun, but I really don't. But so I really did it to support a friend and to learn and she's a very credible person. So I ended up purchasing the tool called QuickWrite AI, which was designed specifically for writers. And I was in the beta group. And I really like their pricing model, as I like yours. It's either a subscription or you pay a one-time fee. Mm-hmm. And the fee has gone up because I was at the ground floor, but I think I paid around $297. And then what happens is you give feedback and you ask questions and then you're part of co-creating the tool, which I thought was really fun. And anytime there was a lifetime warranty, my dad always said, whose lifetime, yours or mine? And I think it's their lifetime. So, you know, that's okay. But I preferred that pricing model and I've been really happy with it. For whatever reason, I'm not afraid of it. And I think it's pretty exciting. You know, I've been through a lot of iterations of business and technology and technological advancements. And I was just thinking about like how crippled the world was with fear in 1999. I mean, it's hard to remember and it's hard to go back there, but I mean, there was money being thrown at it. It was in the news every single day. And at the company I was working with at the time, they made me carry a pager and I was a pager. I had to carry a pager. And I was number 13 on the disaster recovery team. And I thought, if the first 12 people can't figure it out, we're all going to die because I am not the person who's going to be able to save the systems and save the world. So it came to that.
Two things, though, that I want to highlight from that, Alicia, is, as you know, you said that, like, you weren't one of, like, the most, you know, early adopters of technology and such. But I think, and another thing you said was how this tool that you're using, this Gen AI tool, is specifically for writers. So I just want to highlight that there for the attendees. And that is that, like, even for law, sure, we could use these free, you know, ChatGPT, Claude, and there are certain ways, you know, we'll talk about different tools for different purposes. But using the tools that are specifically designed for law if you're a lawyer or for writing if you were a writer, I think make a heck of a lot of sense. And when you use the free tools versus using some of the paid tools, the results and the use are going to be different. And they may, in fact, be better if you're actually paying for something, just like with anything else. It doesn't have to be expensive, but, you know, when you pay for something, you're likely to get better results because they could also take those funds and invest in it and such. But what you said about being an early adopter, I think, is really important for the legal professionals who are tuning in, because so many more seasoned practitioners, shall I say, they don't like adopting technology. But with this technology, it's natural language. And so we're able to communicate with it just like we would communicate with a colleague or a client or somebody else. And so I think even just like looking at the interface of how we use Gen AI, that's a big, like, low friction point for being able to adopt and play around with this technology. I think where people start to get scared is, like, they see, like, oh, like, the valuable work that I used to do, you know, this is maybe doing some of that work for me. But for those of us who have been playing around with it, even just for a little bit, we see how it just elevates what we're able to accomplish and sort of get us to an end more valuable result faster for our clients or whomever we're going to be helping out with this. Maybe you want to share some of, like, examples of that have helped,
definitely,
you know, helped you?
Definitely. Elevate is a great word. And, you know, like when people bought cars and you'd give your car a name, I'm thinking, why don't I give this tool a name? But I guess I just call it my brainstorming buddy. It's like the best brainstorming partner I've ever had. So, you know, prior to this tool, you'd get in a room, five people sit around, a couple people have ideas. Maybe nobody does. Maybe someone's late. I open up the tool. I am ready to work. I'm ready to go. I'm super excited. And you talked about the natural language, and I understand there's a new job being developed. So while other jobs are going to go away, new work is going to be created, and it's called prompt engineer. So you have to ask the question in the right way to get the right answer, and you keep playing around. So it's a very, like, a very sophisticated Google. And one of the really important things in writing is the first sentence. And, you know, our attention spans are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So the first sentence is even more important, or the way you grab people. So the AI tool that right now, it doesn't have something that says, I'll write you an amazing first sentence. But it does have a section where it creates titles. So the title is generally for the book. And people say, you know, don't judge a book by its cover, or that. But that's kind of a falsehood. The two most important things about a book are the title and the cover design, you know, to get people's attention from all the other content that's out there. So you want to get something that really grabs you. So I use that title feature a lot for opening sentences, for titles, for article titles. But basically what it does for me is it gets rid of that blank page. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh no, what am I going to do? And usually it's the demon in your head. It's like, oh, it's not good enough, or I don't like it, or I'm not really feeling it. But I put it into the tool and out comes ton of writing. And I've never copied and pasted. And I doubt that any writer or business professional worth, you know, their salt would ever copy and paste anything. And that's where discernment comes in. Discernment and creativity. And I think that's our value as people.
Right. And I mean, like, you know, it's a title generator, like you said, like one feature of this, but it's not coming up with titles from thin air. You know, like you've put in enough, you know, talk about prompt engineering, right? You've given it enough data or enough content to synthesize a title based on everything that you've put in the tool, right?
That's exactly right. And that idea came from the human.
Right.
So the idea has been in my head all along. I just needed to develop it. And so I think that, you know, once we kind of figure it out, and it could be really great, and we'll talk about this later, but we have to be fair to the people that use it. We have to, you know, figure that part out. But I remember when I first started working, people that were graphic designers despised computers. They're like, they wanted to sketch and they wanted to draw and they did things on foam core. And you either had to jump onto technology or find another career, because those days are long gone. The really great designers, I find, sometimes still do sketch things out, or they still work on their craft in other ways. So just because you're using these tools doesn't mean that you're limited to them. The other thing that I thought you brought up was a really interesting distinction was, I can't remember the exact words you used, but one is AI and the other is like efficiency tools, technology efficiency tools. Now, but I was framing those in the same way. So I actually haven't worked with a client yet where we've discussed AI, whether I would use it or not. I've only used it for my own work. So that's a topic that is coming up now. And then I thought, well, if I do have this discussion, which tools can't I use? Can I not use Grammarly to check grammar? Can I not use a spell check? But other writers pushed back on me and said, oh, no, there's a difference. But in my mind, I'm framing them the same way. It's an efficiency tool. I mean, right. I know how to use the Oxford comma, but if I don't do it on demand, am I a bad person? And I like all my tools, but
it's going to help improve our quality of work that we're delivering at the end of the day, right? And however you choose to price your services as a solopreneur or a small business owner, if you're able to produce higher quality work, you could charge a higher price for that. Or you can do what I'm doing, which is try to serve more people more effectively, and then increase what you're able to earn from a volume-based, quick and efficient and effective production quality in terms of work product. Something else, before we get too far away from it, I want to ask you about and highlight is, you know the whole thing about idea generation and title generators when you're putting in content, is you, the human, still pick, oh yeah, these are the good titles. It can happen that it comes up with a title that's like, that's fantastic, I am going to use that. Of course, it might be like one out of like 20 titles that in the other 19 were garbage, but you have the subject matter expertise to identify this is a good title, or maybe these three or four titles are directionally correct. Yes, I could see, and maybe you, the human, now come in and you're like, we're going to take elements of that title or this title or this first sentence or that first sentence. And now you come in and you're The AI did the synthesis of the work, and now you're further synthesizing and the back end to come up with something that's going to be better for you, for your writing, or for your clients, right? And so, like, you know, as the subject matter expert, you know what that is going to look like, and that's not going anywhere. Nobody has to worry about jobs disappearing. It's just the type of work that you're going to be doing is different, I think, and you tell me, but my thought process is we, the subject matter experts, in whatever we are an expert in, that becomes even more valuable because we could identify what goes into the AI and what comes out of the AI as being high quality.
That's exactly the way I look at it. I think that if anybody kind of cuts and pastes or just uses it, that's not the writer you want to work with anyway. So same thing, same idea. The other thing that I'm very excited about is the worlds that it's opening up for people. There must have been some really awful red pen editors in grade school, high school, university, because people are crippled with fear about their writing. And I have a family member, a nephew, who was diagnosed with a learning disability and when he was a kid, and now he's in his 30s and his kids are in team sports. And he was asking me how to write a sponsorship letter. So I told him, and I said, you know, nobody's going to care about how cute your kids are. They want to care about who comes to the events and if they can sell their products or services. So I kind of gave him those ideas. And that took about 24 hours of emailing back and forth. And sorry about the phone. Emailing back and forth and going through it. But once he understood the concept, he ran with it. He's gotten four or five sponsors. He's getting businesses to sponsor his kids' sports events. And he got a couple landscapers, which I think is really brilliant here in the Midwest, and snowing in the winter and grass cutting in the summer. And, you know, he's doing really well with it. And he said to me, if this was available when I was in school, I would have got good grades. So I shared this with another creative and he said, but he's not learning anything. And I said, I would argue that he's learning a lot. I mean, he's learned how to get sponsors. And the other thing that's really neat about him with this for me is he didn't go on for advanced education because it wasn't his thing. He actually joined the military where he flourished in the military because it was great in the structure and he really, really, really liked it. But it's just opened up so many worlds to him. And I think that's super exciting. So I don't need to be the person who drafts that for him, but I was the person who consulted and gave him the framework. And then he went and he created more than I could have even imagined. I think that's brilliant.
Right. And even then, I mean, talk about the possibility for helping people help themselves with these AI tools as well, because the way that we're able to sell our services in whatever way we choose to do that could even be on the prompt engineer side, right? Of like, we could help, like that example is, what if they went and they took what you gave them and now they could go to whatever Gen AI tool they want to use and they could generate so much more because of the advice that they got from you than they would if they just went to this tool without consulting the expert first, right?
And absolutely.
There's different ways we could sell our services there too, right? You could sell it as, I help you with the prompt engineering on the front end, or you could just hire me to do the whole thing for you, right? And like, maybe you tier your pricing in a different way and increase the accessibility of your services, right?
Right. And you and I have chatted about this before on a separate conversation, but say, for instance, we get a client that's absolutely against any kind of automation tools, technology, AI. They're like, no, you need to do it. Well, then my rate goes up significantly because, you know, if I'm a woodworker and I have to use a handsaw versus a power saw, you know, you're going to pay me for that labor. And that's going to be a handcrafted piece of furniture, not something you can get at IKEA. And not necessarily that our work, if we use this tool, would be, you know, cookie cutter, but it's going to be more advanced. We're going to use better use of time. We're going to be able to be more creative.
Right. But this is a fantastic example, actually. So think about it, right? Like, how many people could have like a nice piece of furniture, like way back when before machines were manufacturing furniture, right? Mm-hmm. So what did it do? It reduced the cost of buying nicer furniture for everybody. And that's what happened. And now if you really want something custom and crafted that's 100% human generated, yeah, you're going to pay a premium for that handcrafted chair or whatever piece, you know, or table, right? Versus buy something from, you know, that's been manufactured by a machine. And there's value to both. And I do think that we're going to see people who are saying, you know, this document or this, you know, book or whatever, it was 100% human generated. And that becomes of a different sort of a value. And we've been doing it for years with things like machines taking over the manufacturing process.
Yes. And I've seen writers put it in their disclosure that one clever writer wrote, for better or for worse, no AI tool was used in the generation of this copy. And, you know, so it's important to some people, they disclose it. If I was working with a client, we would definitely have this conversation about it to see, you know, how they feel about it. But most people don't understand the inner workings of writing, just like they probably don't understand the inner workings of the law. So it's kind of bringing that client into the sausage making of what you do.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, like you said, you know, you don't want to just copy and paste whatever the AI pumps out, especially if you're using the free tools because they're not trained and focused and specialized in whatever type of thing that you're trying to get the content from. But I think even it doesn't take an expert to read a piece of garbage written by AI, right? You see these articles, you know, what was it? Sports Illustrated, you know, got in trouble because they were clearly using AI to write stuff and no human.
Is that right?
I don't know if you heard that story. Yeah.
But not yet.
I think it was Sports Illustrated. Double check. I know we're live on the internet, but let me know in the comments if it was a different company. I don't mean to disparage Sports Illustrated if it wasn't actually them, but I think it was. Whatever publication said, it was clear, they got in a lot of hot water, that like no human eyes actually reviewed the output before it was published. And so, like, I think anybody who's not an expert can still tell, oh, this is garbage written by AI.
Right.
That human eyes didn't look at it first. I think the quality of output still changes based upon the type of human eyes that partnered with the AI to come up with the final product. When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form and scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show.
Exactly right. And if that did happen, and we know it's happening in some places, in some instances, you know, shame on them. I mean, but then I think one of the things that this is going to introduce for us is better quality of life. So we'll be able to focus on the things that are important to us and actually use our creativity, use our skill. And, you know, I have to remind myself of this and probably your more seasoned colleagues. We can't go any faster. We can't. We need to slow down. We need to regroup. We need to assess. We need to look at what we're doing and why we're doing it, especially with content. There's so much content out there now. I received an email from a woman who wrote a book. It's really great. And then she sent me a free ebook. Now, this is very popular. People do this. And you write the ebook and then you send it to them and then they have your email. And they're like, oh, welcome to my newsletter. So her book was all about authenticity. And then she writes back and says, you know, how did you like my ebook? And, you know, thank you for subscribing to my newsletter. And I thought it was kind of ironic because like the whole message is authenticity. And I didn't subscribe to your newsletter. I said, well, I actually just wanted the ebook and I really appreciate it. And I kind of got a little, you know, message back that said, just don't subscribe then. And I thought, but that's not the point. The point is you're talking about how to engage with people authentically. And then you poached my email. I mean, to me, that's the point. But so we need that human interaction. We need to slow down and say, what are we doing? Why are we sharing? Why are we doing it? And I guess to hold ourselves accountable is this is such a hot topic. And I have jumped into it and I want to share it with friends and I want to share it with colleagues. And it's really important to me to minimize the fear as well as to hold people accountable. So there's smart people out there working on these tools that can build controls into them. So my plea to them is, hey, do the right thing. Do the best thing, you know, do the best thing for all. And, you know, we need to figure that out. And that's part of our creativity and our discernment. And it's our responsibility to do that.
Right. And as far as, and I know you said you're still not really working with client work using these tools.
My own, I use it though. Yeah,
right.
Definitely.
So let's talk a little bit more about that, right? Because you are, I mean, I'm a true solo. Like I don't employ anybody. I just work for myself. And so like me leveraging these tools has really helped me have like more the kind of output that I would have if I had like a large team working on things. Yeah. Because like they, you know, it becomes almost like the way I would use an assistant or an associate attorney or a paralegal or someone. I'm able to bounce ideas off of, come up with things, improve my writing. Like you mentioned Grammarly before. Grammarly is a great example. And they are now incorporating AI generation in their tools if you're paying for that level of the subscription. So, and another thing that the founder of Grammarly has said, or the founder, the CEO at least, has said is he looks more at these tools as not so much artificial intelligence as it is augmented intelligence. Because
ooh,
what it's
I like
doing
that
is
word.
Yeah, it's taking like our knowledge, because this goes back to the other part of our conversation, is like we are the ones who are prompting the AI. We are the ones who are able to analyze the output of the AI. And so what it's really doing is it's not this own separate, independent, intelligent thing. It's augmenting human intelligence to improve the intelligence that we have. And of course, Grammarly has sort of done that for a long time before like Gen AI came to the scene, but I really like that kind of reframing of it. Because when I'm using AI, like I would work with team members, that is ultimately what it's doing. Because when we work with other people to get to an end goal, we're all augmenting each other's input and output, right? So like that's the way that I've been using it. Is that been your experience too?
Well, yes. And as a person who's more seasoned, the key to my success in my prior lives was a great assistant. And man, I miss her every day. She's retired. She bought a house in Missouri, and I would just give her things and then she would create it and everything would be wonderful. And I would get to do the things that I like to do. And so as a person who's not an early adopter and going in kicking and screaming, I was looking at the closed door versus looking at the opportunities. And I was trying to find that assistant that would replace the level of expertise that I was supported with. And people want to work in new ways now. They want to be independent. They want to do it their own way. They want to work on their own time. I had a virtual assistant for a minute who I said, you know, could you figure these things out? She said, well, just call TaskRabbit. And I was like, well, that's not help. I want you to do it. I want you to do it all. And then I want to come back and say, oh, it's done. But, and I could have gone down the path, and there's more virtual assistants, and there's actually virtual assistants that are, that specify in writing. But one colleague I was talking to, it's like people kind of want to do what they want to do. So we're really investing in our creativity. So it's hard to find that person. Although I do like to hire interns, and I'm probably going to hire an intern for the summer because I like that mentoring and that relationship and the reverse mentoring. You know, let me learn what your world is about because it's so different than my world. So I have had to reluctantly engage in these tools and think about it in a new way. And when you've been working for a while, you know what you're good at. So you go at what you are good at. And this is not my forte, figuring it out. I mean, you were figuring it out, the LinkedIn Live. And that's the other thing, is I'm kind of the canary for my peers. I'm going out and they're like, hey, Alicia's doing it. Maybe I should try. And so I like spreading that word for people. So I've had to grow as a professional and say, well, give it a try. And then also I've had to say, you know, I learned typing in high school. They used to teach that in high school, typing in office machines, 10 key adding machines, other things too. And if somebody said, hey, you have to learn to type today, like on a machine the way I did, I would not do it because it's not my gift. It's not my skill. I'm not kinesthetic. I never was an 80 word per minute typist. I got up to probably 60, which wasn't good enough, but you did it because you had to do it. And that's how I feel about this too. It's, we have to do it. You know, it's the future. The future is evolving as we're talking. And even when we set this meeting up a week ago or so, I grew in my awareness so much around artificial intelligence just in that 5 to 7 days.
Right, right. I mean, you mentioned some great things, and like going back to like the intern and even schooling and like learning about this, like right now, a lot of educational institutions are talking about how, oh, like AI is banned. Like, you can't use AI. And yet here we are, you and I, in our businesses, like using it in our own ways, as are so many other business owners and businesses using it. And yes, there are, you know, legal considerations. We could talk about that. We don't have a huge amount of time left. We could do a tip of the iceberg with some of those things. But from a, you know, if you're going to hire an intern, if that intern comes to you and they're able to like really leverage these tools because they've been learning about it in school.
Right.
I mean, that would be a huge benefit to you, right? Because maybe you're also still learning these tools, but you're also running a business. And so, you know, you have to do all the other things involved with that. But now you could say to this intern or employee or virtual assistant, because I've had a virtual assistant business owner on my podcast, and like they're training their people on using AI because it increases the value of the VAs to whomever they're serving, right? Now you could tell your VA, hey, I'd love to do XYZ thing, and they could just go use the AI tools for you and do it, right? So there's a lot of opportunity there. And to every potential educator who might watch this at some point, like, it's important to teach the kids how to use these tools, or students, because not all students are kids, right? And it's going to help their future employers at a minimum, and maybe at a maximum help them if they ever want to start their own business and lower the cost of what it's going to take to do that. Because, you know, look, I think it empowers everybody to be able to work for themselves. I mean, you and I, the Scale Finance Group, you know, we like people who work for themselves. We're a little biased in that regard. But, you know, you don't maybe need to hire somebody who you previously would have hired because you could leverage these tools. But that person who you would have been able to hire, they can also leverage these tools and go help more people, right? And so I really think, like, it's going to encourage and help make it more easy to become a solopreneur to leverage these tools.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've heard this argument before in the education system. I remember when we couldn't use encyclopedias to do research. So, you know, that was a really big deal. And then there was Wikipedia. It's like, Wikipedia, oh my gosh, this is terrible. And I've looked at Wikipedia. I look at these sources and then I go and I validate the sources. So again, that's the human brain, you know, interacting, being discerning. I remember when you couldn't use a calculator to take a math test. And then you had to learn how to use the calculus calculator in a university. And then it cost like a mountain of money. I can't remember. But, you know, then that was the big thing. Not do you not have it, but can you use it if you do have it? Right. So it's just really an evolution. But we are coming up on the hour. I hope we can continue this. I'd love to do another live another day. It's such a rich topic. Maybe we'll get some comments. I'll leave that to you. Again, we're flooded with content, but well, one thing I want to bring up, like we've got 15 minutes is copyright. We've got 15 minutes. Let me lay this on you. Copyright and innovation is protected by the Constitution. In Article 1 of the Constitution. I mean, whoa.
Yeah, I mean.
Our framers wanted us to be innovative and creative, recognizing that it's our asset. Man, that's to me mind-blowing.
Yeah. You know, it's one of these things where, you know, I'm not like a copyright lawyer, right? Like I don't do it every day, but I can tell you, yeah. I mean, you know, you learn in law school about that. And it's one of these things where I think our perspective on it is changing, because the reason they wanted to codify, you know, those rights that people have was that they want innovation to happen in the United States. And I think that we could see that has happened, right? We value intellectual property as a society. Yes. I think that though, as AI makes output voluminous, in particular in like the visual space, like yes. I was able to use, I think they shut it off because of some of the training issues with Gemini, with their image model. Like they were making founding fathers, you know, like minorities or something. So like they turned off, I think, some image features, but I used Gemini's image generating features back when that was allowed. I don't know, at the time that we're going out, they might have fixed it. I'm not sure. To come up with an awesome logo for a cool new podcast, like educational podcast thing that I'm coming up with. So like I would have never been able to like generate that kind of image before. Now, you know, I went into Canva and I updated it. And so like I didn't just use the image that the AI generated, and because that might not be copyrightable because the AI made it, not a human. A human has to make it. Now, that's like, you know, it's complicated because like if a human uses a computer to make it, did the computer make it or did the human make it? Like I gave the prompts that created the image, you know, so like to what extent, like we're still sort of figuring this out as far as like the Copyright Office has released, the U.S. Copyright Office is releasing publications and they're doing a lot of community outreach to figure out like whether things should be protected or not. But it's complicated because when the output increases exponentially, you just look at a supply and demand of it all. And like, is it worth protecting the output anymore when the supply is voluminous? And so I wonder if maybe it does make sense to only provide copyright protection to 100% human generated things, because there's going to be fewer of those versus AI generated things, which there will be so many of. Does it even make sense from an economic standpoint to be protecting the copyright in that, even if I, the human, am doing the prompt engineering? But what I think then, I think it sort of puts it on its head, because right now copyright is about, you can't copyright an idea. It has to be something that's generated, something that's made, that a human actually made. So but we're looking more at output than at input. And in a Gen AI world, I wonder if like those prompts, or like, I wonder if there's a way that you look at, and I'm, again, not a legal expert.
Right.
But I wonder if we're looking at the input as being the more valuable thing in a Gen AI world, because it's that input that you're able to, you know, generate this massive output with.
I really, really like that. And I really like looking at the 100% human generated, because it honors the craftsmanship and the artistry of the work, which I think is really great. And perhaps another root cause is just looking at the way creatives are compensated. And I don't know if you've been looking at universal basic income, but I have been looking into it. And I think it's kind of a brilliant idea. I mean, if our goal is to unleash creativity as a nation, you know, why not create a system that allows for that? Because that's really the root causes, you know, these, some of these things take off. And the reason I brought up the Constitution is, I mean, this is, it goes to the Supreme Court. I mean, this is crazy. So there was a case with a photographer who took a photograph of Prince, and it was published in Vanity Fair, and she made $400. And then the Andy Warhol Foundation, which again brings up like another interesting point about how you make more money dead than alive. And then they used the image and they created the famous Andy Warhol silkscreen, and she actually won. It was dismissed at the federal district level, but it went up to the Supreme Court, and then she won. But the judges that voted against it said this is going to squash creativity. But then I wonder, you know, she was paid $400 for a photograph. They didn't use it with her permission. Say they did use it to her with her permission. How much would she have gotten? I don't know. You know, it's really rough.
Yeah, I think, and I didn't actually read any of the opinions there, but I think what it was is that like she did license the photo for a specific use, and then they used it beyond that license. And like whether or not that's a permissible use, and then you run into issues like fair use of something. Yep. And it is very complicated. Again, it's complicated enough that I don't give any clients legal opinions on whether or not something is
right.
And a lot of it depends, and like you just don't know. And then that's why we have the court system, because when things are unknown and you make your best judgment, and then if you have to litigate and see what a judge or a jury or an appellate court or Supreme Court will say about it. So there's a lot of unknowns in that space, and a lot of it is just comfortability with how much risk you want to take as to whether or not something's going to be a fair use or not. Yeah. And I think that that's what they were claiming, was it was fair use, even though maybe there was a license, then it went beyond the license use. So I think that's ultimately why they lost, is because there was a license use, and then this was clearly like not stipulated in those terms. But
right.
But yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting topic. Yeah, we'll see sort of where we as a country land on it. And I still think like you can, you know, maybe there's something about copyright interest. And this is where I think the copyright office is right now, of like, if you take the AI output and you modify it, right? So like, for example, if I'm an artist, I can like generate like 100 thousands of images, and the AI doesn't get it right. Like there are things like fingers, hands, like there are some telltale signs right now where we are with AI. It will probably get better in the future, where like it just doesn't get it right. Spelling sometimes, words, like the AI doesn't get it right. But if I am an artist and I have all the advanced editing tools, now I could take that image that might have taken me hours to generate, and now it took seconds, and I could go in and I could fix it in a few minutes, right? So it's not going to make sense, though, for me, if I'm charging an hour in that time, because all I need to do is go in and fix what the AI output. And what the AI output could be incredibly creative based on my input, because I'm the visual artist expert.
Yep.
And I've tried to play with these tools, and I'm not very good at them, the visual ones, because I'm a text person. I'm a writing person, right?
Right.
That's why I'm in law.
Right.
But I feel like that's the like artist equivalent of like, it's not going to, in a Gen AI world of all these efficiencies, it's not going to make sense to bill by the hour in whatever profession you're in when you're leveraging these tools. Instead, you're going to want to think of what's the value I'm giving to my client, and that's worth something. And so it's a paradigm shift of how you think about what is the value that you're giving. What's the input, and then changing the output. And I still think when you change that output, that like those changes may be cut. There's no legal advice is given during this LinkedIn Live. It may be copyrightable. Definitely talk to legal counsel to see if you can get those parts of it get some copyright protection there.
There is a nonprofit law firm. I'll give them a shout out. It's called the Law for the Creative Arts here in Chicagoland. And it's a nonprofit. So people want to look that up or check out some of those resources. But I guess my advice would be to people who are very adamant, go to demos, learn about it, talk to people. Discern, you know, and I mean, the input is important. So we need to hear everybody's voice about what they think about this. And a week ago, I was less sensitive to the concerns because I'm loving it. But in to prepare for this talk, I talked to people with other perspectives, and they brought us some really valid things. And I thought, okay, you know, like, let me look at this from a broader perspective, and the people could be harmed by it. So we need to hear those voices and also have their input, you know, as they actually look at the tools, though, because that's where the fear comes from. When you actually see the tool in action, it's just great. You know, it's not scary. It's fast. It's efficient. It's a wonderful tool.
Yeah. And I think especially for those who are billing their time still as creatives in particular, I think they see this as a big concern. Lawyers especially, you know, that it would take them hours and hours to draft or review documents can now be done in seconds or minutes. You know, and they're billing their time. You know, and that's what the podcast Law Subscribed is all about. And so I think that you just have to, you know, it's going to challenge your worldview, and that can be scary. Mm-hmm. But it's okay to reframe and reshape your worldview a little bit. And I'm really glad that, Alicia, you were able to join me today on this LinkedIn Live so we could hopefully help reshape people's worldview on AI. And if the fears can be founded, but if you can make some changes in your life or in your business, I think you could overcome those fears and see how this could be such a boon to your life or your business if you're able to incorporate and use these tools. And no tool is perfect. And, you know, no human is perfect. Right. People make mistakes all the time. Why should this AI be infallible? It's not. Everything's fallible. But you can't just I think the largest takeaway is don't blindly rely on what the AI creates, you know, because it will make mistakes. If you gave it to a human assistant, they're going to make mistakes, the same task, but they're also going to take hours or days to get you something back, and the AI will do it in seconds or minutes. Yeah. And so there will be mistakes, but fewer. And it will be like just the creative, it will be a creative explosion. And I glossed over your universal income statement. So I will just go back to that for a second.
Oh, wow.
A few minutes.
You did that online while we were talking?
Right. So I didn't even address it. But you know, yeah, I think there's something there. And Bill Gates talked about how we may have a 3-day work week, you know, in the near future with the explosion of Gen AI and increasing productivity there. And also putting AI into machines that will then do the manual labor that humans were doing, right? So like in that kind of a world, does a universal basic income type thing, whatever it looks like, does that make sense? And then what do we do? And whether there's UBI or not, I do feel like the value of what we humans can contribute is what we're doing here, Alicia, and that is this live thing, like live human interaction, virtual or in person, and also the creativity. Because AI can only generate based on what it's been trained on. It's not independently creative. That's something that is a human thing. So the most valuable aspects of being human end up being the things that truly make us human. Person-to-person interaction and creativity. And who doesn't want to live in that kind of a world?
I think it's exciting. I think it's super exciting. I think it's the manifestation of all our hard work.
Yeah. So to wrap it up here in a nice little bow, Alicia, if any of the people who tuned in today, we only have three left, although we got over a dozen. We got like close to 20, I think, during the live stream. But more people will see this asynchronously in post and later in a few weeks on my podcast. If people wanted to follow up with you or subscribe to your newsletter on LinkedIn, like how do they do that?
Yeah, I'd like to be connected through LinkedIn. Follow me, follow the newsletter, shoot me an email. I think that's the best way. And I think that's one of the great things about social media, too, is we kind of get to know people before we've actually met them. So find out a little bit about what I'm doing there.
Absolutely. And for everyone who's in Alicia's network, if you are a lawyer, lawsubscribe.com, www.lawsubscribe.com. That's the newsletter and podcast for helping lawyers move away from the billable hour. And my law firm is Subscription Attorney LLC at subscriptionattorney.com. And LinkedIn's a great place to get in touch with me. So with that, thank you. Thank you, everybody who tuned in live today.
I appreciate you coming.
And that's our show. Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for being sponsors. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with somebody you think would find value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.